Hello, and welcome to Fantastic Comic Fan. I am your host, R.T. Fleming, and it is my mission to help you find your next digital comic book pick from the golden age to now. I have been reading comic books for over 40 years, and have never lost my passion for comic books. It's something I try to pass on to old and new readers. It's Monday, April 29th, 2024, and this is episode 157 of the show. With this show, I conclude my look at DC Comics today. As regulars of the podcast know, I seldom cover current comics. There are too many fantastic podcasts, news sites, and blogs that cover those things far better than I can. Initially, I was skeptical of the Dawn Initiative. Going back to Rebirth, I found DC had a problem of dangling a few characters in front of fans and not exactly paying off as they should have. But over the last few months, I noticed something different when I read my weekly DC comics. First, I don't buy physical copies anymore. I subscribe to DC's digital service, which I covered in the previous episode. If you haven't listened to it, go back. Like most of my podcasts, it's short form. I try to make each show bite-sized, around 15 to 20 minutes long. Last time, I talked about DC Universe Infinite, and the costs are well worth it, especially since comics hit the app about a month after they hit the comic shop. Unlike Marvel Unlimited, which has a three-month window, I like that I can stay somewhat current on what's going on. I didn't come out with the show last week. I skipped a week. I tossed the idea of finishing up, but I wanted to see what newish releases were added. I'm glad I did, because every week there's some sort of payoff or some outstanding comic that excites me in a way I don't get very often anymore. It took me to figure out what DC was doing to make me look forward to the latest comics, and it connects to things going on in my own life. As I said, I'm not bringing podcast guests on for a bit, and I've talked about why in the past few shows. I have a few taped yet that I want to finish edits on, and I'll take it from there. But I'm returning to the basics right now. Solo shows that talk about fantastic comics that I think deserve extra focus. As I said, there are fantastic picks from the golden age to the present if read within the context of the times. I recently started reading the Silver Age Flash from the very beginning. There's 15 years of those comics in the archives. I'm going to slowly read through them. Now, the Silver Age Flash stories are nothing like the Flash stories today because, well, Silver Age read differently. I am enjoying Flash meeting his rogues for the first time and the early romance between Barry and Iris. And if you haven't read the Silver Age Flash, you are missing out on some fantastic stories. When I was taping guests more often, I often complained about wanting to do more solo shows. I couldn't find the time or willpower to make it happen. See, I love doing research and often find myself going down all sorts of rabbit holes. Two shows I immensely enjoy guesting on were Billy Dee's Monsters and Magazine and Ross Age's Stop, Let's Team Up. Both are fantastic podcasts that are distinctive and well worth checking out. You'll find links to both shows in the show notes. It's probably been about 6 months since I've reached out to do a taping. As I've said, life happens. I'm not one to complain about things, but life has been rather interesting and I've been slowly pulling back to reset and going back to the basics with life and the podcast. I'm a Bronze Age baby, and I used to take notepads out and take notes with paper and pens. Over time, I stopped doing that and did research on the computer, taking notes via my two monitors. Over time, I felt it was redundant to write down notes in pen and paper, only to transfer them to the computer. It just seemed to save more time. But that big office studio computer we used for everything in my life, and at times I felt like I was chained to the damn thing. At other times, I need to do things there that would fill me with anxiety. Yes, another one of my quirks. And we could throw in some panic attacks now and then. I was avoiding the big computer and not getting enough done, not just for the podcast, but in other areas. Something had to give, and I had to start making small changes. First, I changed that room from a studio to an office. There's a lot of mental baggage, and every time I told the smart house to turn the studio lights on, it didn't fill me with the joy and fun that doing the podcast used to have. I wasn't burned out on the podcast, but I was, and still to a certain extent, juggling many things simultaneously. There wasn't enough time and other things going on to get back to podcasting. And look, there's no really any money involved. It's more about making fantastic picks for anyone who comes across the podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I decided to go back to the basics again, where I pulled out the pad of paper and started taking notes with a pen for possible shows. And even after work, I would sit down with that recliner, going through my iPad, taking notes. I was utterly dumbfounded to find the fun of researching was back. As I put this intro together, I was also sorting out the notes for the week and typing them out for future shows. Going further, I'm limiting my time in front of that big office computer and designating it only for specific tasks. This intro and notes I'm putting together are being made on the laptop in the living room. And later I'll take everything outside and work on things between other projects. Again, a reset and going back to the basics. And every week I have a list of things to try and get done, and the top of the paper always says, less is more. Now what does that have to do with comic books? I'll get to that in a minute. I wouldn't say I like sharing too much about my personal life because this is a comic book podcast, not a self-help one. But some people out there might be going through some similar things, and maybe my words might register with them, and maybe I might help them with something. Now back to DC Comics. They're going back to the basics, resetting, and less is more. That's all can be applied to DC Comics today in a positive way. Does everything DC put out the best comics in the world? No, but I don't tend to write too much about the negative comics. It's just not niche. I like my niche is to focus more on the positive things. I have noticed DC is putting out far fewer comics, and I don't have a problem with that. So as long as DC sticks to what it's been doing. My comics at the app on Tuesday morning, I actually hold back reading them all at once. I've been reading one a day and enjoying the heck out of DC these days. Hence, this two-part podcast. You know, the latest Green Arrow, boy, am I an ally these days, more than I've been in years. There was a long-awaited reunion between Roy and Ally, and there have been so many events and things going on, I needed a scorecard to keep going on with that DC stuff that I'd forgotten they hadn't connected in years. And wow, their reunions was one of those big comic book tugs at the heartstring. Anyway, it's been a blast putting these two shows together. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still here. If you are new to checking the podcast, check it out for the first time. Thanks for checking it out. Hope you continue to sample the show. Please look at the show notes, follow the podcast on social media, subscribe. So I want the podcast to continue to grow, as I've said, introduce fans to a different way of discovering and reading fantastic comic books. Now on to today's show. Then there's Batman. I got lost in the Batman, Catwoman, Gotham War, which really didn't seem to make that big of a deal. I haven't been into Batman Detective for a couple of years. I think Gotham became too dreary and it seemed like the city was about to be burned down to the ground every other day. And how often did the seemingly overused Joker fit into all those story arcs for the last few years? Recently, partly for these DC shows, I got caught up in both Detective Comics and Batman. Bruce's the tortured soul is beyond depressing. Batman and almost everything Gotham is a big turnoff, especially with world events going on. Comics, which is partly why I'm slowly reading through that 15-year-old in a flash, are supposed to be an escape fun thing for me to do, not be reminded of the real world. It seems like there's a lot of trashing in Metropolis over in the Superman titles, but at the end of the day, you know Superman and the family will make things right. There's a sense of hope, and things might not turn out exactly as we want, but it can get a little bit better at least. Now don't get me wrong, Zarsky is doing some original arcs and taking Batman in some new directions. Interestingly, Failsafe plays into the absolute power event this summer, and I'm hoping some of the stuff going on with Batman gets tied up. The creative team over in Detective is doing some things a little bit different. And Talia has been around, again, for years, but in those Detective issues, I think we're seeing a different side of Talia, someone more authentic to what the character was like in the Bronze Age. In a way, the Talia and Bruce are DC most tragic couple, because they're two people who could be together, but will never, ever be, no matter how often DC does a soft boot. Adding to that sort of tragic feeling is Damian, their son, who kind of symbolizes what things could have been like if things were different. Now, the whole Bat-Cat staying apart feels forced, especially when they came that close to getting married a couple years ago. some readers felt cheated they didn't marry, considering everything leading up to that almost wedding. Keeping them apart doesn't work as a story. It doesn't seem to be true to the characters. To me, getting them married propels the Batman mythos into new directions. After years of ignoring the marriage of Clark and Lois, DC not only embraced it, but also made them to one hot couple. Some of the stuff going on between them is wow. But it's also staying true to what Clark and Lois are all about. I miss some of the old Batman. And there's been some hints of the old Batman. I like what they're doing in the Batman and Robin title again. Did anything genuinely long-lasting come out of the whole arc where Damian and Bruce were fighting over things? Robin, any of the Robins, bring out a side of Batman that feels more authentic and human. There've been some nice bits in the various tones between Bruce and Dick. That again exactly zeroes on their long history and how they feel about each other. It's nice to see those moments in DC not ignoring it. And part of that deep dive was starting to read Catwoman. I don't think I ever read a Catwoman series before. No reason. There's just a ton of comics out there. I think I jumped on the arc with the beginning of Dawn, and outside of the Gotham War, I find interesting and enough going on that I actually look forward to the next issue. And I'm not sure why Poison Ivy works. I don't think there's another book like it by DC. It kind of combines a bit of the Batman mythos and some Vertigo vibes and creating a really weird book. I mean, kind of like, look, it's roadkill. It's a raccoon. No, it's a possum. Oh, it's a raccoon sort of way. It creeps me out. It's been a long time since a book did that to me. Overall, everything Batman feels different than some of the other family books. None of it is crap, and I look forward to seeing some of the arcs wrap up, and maybe just for a while see a less depressing, less beaten down Batman that's been going on to me way, way longer than it should. I can't think of a team more misused in comics than JSA. It seems like DC was always trying to get rid of it, going all the way back to the Golden Age when All-Star Comics was canceled to make way for the new All-Star Western. Now, I admit I have a great fondness for the team because I was caught right in the middle of that Bronze Age JSA revival, again in All-Star Comics. At least DC continued the series where it left off. Back then, legacy numbering mattered. I still think it does. Later, JSA Adventures continued in Adventure Comics, and then it went through all kinds of things. And with the New 52, they totally disappeared. Again. Now, the return of the JSA was hinted at the Rebirth reshot from a few years ago. One of my favorite ills was the one with the Satellite JLA. Hey, new fans, search for Satellite JLA. They had some epic tales that still ripple through DC today. And there was JSA on the other side. Sure, the JSA played a role in the Doomsday Clock, the same title that supposedly wiped out the Legion. And then they were there, but really not there. And one of my gripes with Dark Crisis was that it was a couple of issues before the series was going before the JSA entered the story. I think they should have been part of the JSA from the first issue. And when that JLA died, it would be nice there's a one-shot or something where the JSA addressing the JLA dying. I think it was a missed opportunity. And again, I give it to DC at times. They wait until they have everything lined up to launch JSA again. And who better to revive than Geoff Johns and expand and explore a largely unexplored area of the DC mythos lately. Now it's about time Jay Garrick got his own title after all these years. And I hope it's successful enough that it continues. How Sandman is a big success and other JSAers get a miniseries. They are also rewriting JSA in Golden Age history during this JSA revival. Now, often, when creators reboot or retcon, they get it wrong. I think they forget to write for the fans within themselves. Here, things like Judy Garrick, Jane Jones' long-lost daughter, do work. Alan Scott's series has an origin story that adds to the missiles without taking anything away. I also give John's credit for bringing the real Helena Wayne, the real Huntress, and possibly this Earth's daughter of the Cat and the Bat into the current mythos. It was pretty wonky how he did it, but it works. This new JSA is a touch of the Bronze Age with arcs from the last big revival and nods to the Golden Age mythos. It's still forging a JSA with a slightly different vibe, making it stand out among the Dawn books. And my fanboy wishes to see an Infinity Incorporated revival, with members of the original team, Power Girl and Huntress, mentoring a new wave of heroes like Boom, much like the JSA, which over the years had a seasoned mix of newer and older members. Less hoping, never know, but I really like the JSA focus on the GC again. I hope it continues to expand. And if you haven't looked at the JSA, you really need to do it. It's one of the classic hero groups around. There are quite a few titles I didn't cover in these two shows. Some, like Wonder Woman, I lost interest in a couple years ago because the stories didn't click or strayed away into arcs that didn't matter in the long run. I've read a couple of issues of Tom King's run, but I think I'll wait for a few more issues and read them in bulk. I both like Shazam and World's Finest, but this is a short-form podcast. I didn't want to stretch the DC talk into a third show. I thought that would have been overdoing it. Now, the Penguin series looks interesting, and I'll probably read it once it finishes its run. Jon Stewart's Green Lantern has some less than joyful story points going through it, but when I read, it's getting some good buzz and taking the character again in a new direction. Speaking of Green Lanterns, it's nice to see Hal again. It's a good book, but I wish DC would stop keeping couples apart. Carol Ferris is back, and you can get that feel that they want to be together. Well, they've been a couple pretty much since the Silver Age, much like Barry and Iris. And again, much like Barry and Iris, DC would rather keep characters apart. As Clark and Lois, Ma and Pa Kent, who really should be mixing it more with the rest of the Superman family, and even Jay and Joan Garrick, marriages work and make for stronger characters and stories. One of the less than bright spots of the Dawn, and even before, was DC's not knowing what to do with the Silver Age Flash, Barry Allen. I know, for a lot of fans, Wally West was their Flash. With the New 52, Wally and other chunks of the DC mythos were wiped out. It wasn't until Rebirth that Wally returned, and that scene where Barry and Wally reconnected still hits me all these years later. That scene has become one of my favorite scenes. Then, during Rebirth, DC started deep diving into the Flash mythos and expanding into new ways. Eventually, that led to the return of long dormant speedsters, and then with Dawn, Wally would star in the latest Flash series. Didn't seem to matter because Barry had been kind of bent sometime around Dark Crisis. There have been some good Barry moments, especially in the later Flashes, where many weird things keep crashing around the Flash mythos. It seems to be building to something that will ripple throughout the DC mythos and possibly shake things up. It doesn't seem like the Flash is playing much in the greater mythos or anybody connected to Flash, which is kind of good. I'm kind of glad. It's a fantastic example of characters staying in their own backyard. And I'm well aware I skimmed over some of the creative teams. Usually, I like to talk about everyone from the writer down to the letterer. They all contribute to the end product and should be equally recognized. I'm not reading just the current stuff, but diving deep into their archives. Queued Up is a fantastic underrated series by Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan called Night Force. Then there's this wonky Bronze Age title called Ariane, which takes place in ancient Atlantis, which I'll probably read again because I haven't read it since it first came out decades ago. And don't forget, one of the perks is that every trade is part of the deal. The Emperor Joker art from many years ago that I never read was recently added to the app. Another is JLA Ape, which collects a bunch of annuals that forms an arc I had always heard about, but for one reason or another, I never read it in the first time around. And DC has always had a thing with monkeys and A's. I know some people sniff at DC just as some people sniff at Marvel, but instead of griping about the current state, go in the archives and then find something fantastic new to read, or fall for that old classic all over again. As we all know, the next DC event starts this summer with Absolute Power. I don't know yet, but I have much to say about it. Partly event fatigue. All these events, most of the time, nothing ever seems to really happen. And things, for the most part, go back to the normal. Or, like at Marvel, events that should resonate throughout the mythos barely get acknowledged. For example, not too long ago, Peter was laid up in a hospital and nearly died, or the death of Doctor Strange. They seem to be more about making a fast buck than to give fans what they want, fantastic stories. Now, DC had a big event last year with Nightterra, and it seemed too soon and kind of unnecessary. And yes, there was Beast World, but it was still, or at least seemed like a limited series. You know what I want? The various mythos and families to stay in their own backyard, and perhaps with an occasional crossover. I enjoy the various titles and story arcs and concerned that the next event will take away from what's happening in their books. None of these titles need a sales bump driven by the latest flavor event. They're doing okay by themselves. You know what? I like that there's no JLA, and it works. It shows that the world really doesn't need the JLA, and perhaps the world might even be better off without a JLA. Of course, it'll eventually return, but right now, I'm not missing it at all. What I am missing and I want more of is JSA. I hope they keep expanding that corner of the DC missiles. And DC shouldn't be afraid to mix the JSA into more current stories. I know the Golden Age is its own little thing. I like to see it a little more involved, like with Beast World, for example. One key piece still missing is the Legion of Superheroes. I think the Bendis rebirth ultimately failed because it strayed too far from what people came to know of the Legion. Most of the Legion lore goes back to the Silver Age, and that's the template. You can't just change it all around and expect people to just buy into it. And somewhere along the line, DC decided that Superman was never Superboy. And over the years, it bounced between him being Superboy and not Superboy. And I can't remember exactly how that worked right now. But Clark Kent, as Superboy, goes back to the Golden Age. It was part of the Superman mythos for around 40 years before they decided to change things up. With all these recent changes, why can't Clark have been Superboy? Or better yet, he was only Superboy when he was off on his Legion adventures. It was kind of like a boot camp training for when he becomes Superman one day. It would be also cool that there were two Superboys in the Legion, Clark and John. Well, here's hoping some sort of Legion comes back soon. It's funny, back in the 80s, some people thought the whole multiple Earth thing was too confusing for readers. Hey, I started reading comics at the age of 1977. I was 10 years old. The JSA was revived under its old All-Star Comics. I had no problems with Earth 1, 2. Heck, I even liked Earth 2 more because things happened. Earth 2, Clark and Lois were married in the 40th anniversary issue, and they went on to have their own series as part of the Superman family. That Earth's Cat and Bat did marry, and their daughter became the Huntress. They even killed off Bruce Wayne. And all those JLA, JSA crossovers, I couldn't wait to see what Earth appeared next in those events. So I was reading the latest issue of The Flash, and I felt like I needed a damn scorecard to figure out the deep dive into the mythos. It's not just The Flash. These folks who thought the multiple Earths were confusing, they lose their minds over the stuff floating around in the DC mythos. Yeah, sometimes they get lost and can't quite figure out what they're talking about, but I still have fun reading all these comic books. And like many comics, The Flash is digging deep into the DC mythos. I commented in the last episode how it was cool to see the old Terra Man pop up in a Superman story. And with this current issue of The Flash, the Linear Men appear. Now a light bulb went off and I remembered it. But it looked like they'd been around forever, but nah, they hadn't been. They haven't appeared in decades. And I had actually forgotten they existed until they popped up. And again, it's returning to the basics. And DC embracing the lore instead of casting it aside, because some creator's too lazy to come up with a fantastic story. Also with this issue, and let me tell you, they crammed a lot of stuff in this Flash issue. We have the return of Max, Mercury, and Impulse. Bart returned a little after Rebirth, and Max Mercury was not around much. It was disappointing to see other long-absent speeders, but not Max. It was especially glaring because Max was like a foster dad Impulse and co-starred in that long-running Impulse series. I haven't reread Impulse in years, but there were moments in that Flash comic where Matt and Bart had that connection that came through, and again, it was DC going back to the basics. It worked before, you can make it work again. So many great things going in DC. Well, that's it for today's podcast. Again, I would love to hear from you, a fantastic comic fan, at gmail.com. Remember, new episodes every Wednesday. Thanks so much for listening to this episode, and I hope to see you next time.